This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth. And certainly this is a very important program for all people, because the same principles that apply to my people, Europeans and Americans, it's the same principle that apply to everyone. The principle of freedom, the principle of controlling your own destiny, the principle of peace and decency around the world. And we're increasingly going to a world of conflict, a world of hatred, a world of war. And I think it's in no small part driven by the Jewish supremacists and the so-called neocons who are controlling American policy and who are fueling an incredible conflict in the world right now. Today, I'm going to continue on with my process of speaking my book, Jewish Supremacism. And today, I'm going to be covering a very vital topic, a topic where there's so much misunderstanding. The topic is, of course, anti-Semitism. You hear the word all the time. It's bantered about as freely as water today. Anyone who dares even to criticize Israel or Israel's massacres at Cana or other places in Lebanon is referred to as anti-Semitic. This is a term that's used all the time, but the definitions of the term themselves, the definitions have been created by Jewish supremacists themselves. So today we're going to start from chapter 7. Then the title of the chapter is Roots of Anti-Semitism 1, Economic Exploitation. So here we go. Chapter 7, The Roots of Anti-Semitism 1, Economic Exploitation. It begins with a quote from Theodor Herzl, the founder of modern Zionism. Quote, "Anti-Semitism is an understandable reaction to Jewish defects." When I became aware of the existence of Jewish supremacism and its powerful influence in the United States government and the American media, I spoke openly about it. In a high school civics class, I remarked that Jewish bureaucrats who authored American Mideast policy had a potential conflict of interest. In an effort to quickly dismiss me, my teacher quickly pointed out that the President of the United States was a Gentile. I recounted to her what I thought was an impressive list of important government positions that were held by Zionist Jews who would likely put Israel's interests over that of the strategic American interests. My teacher, frustrated and trying to rebut my points, dropped an intellectual atomic bomb. That kind of sentiment led to the deaths of 6 million Jews, she said. You don't want to give us the impression that you're an anti-Semite, do you? The usually restless and boisterous class became still, and I fell silent. I feared being accused of anti-Semitism. What was anti-Semitism? Had I become an anti-Semite for simply opposing elements of Jewish supremacism? That very afternoon, I went to the school library and found some books on anti-Semitism. Jews wrote all of them, and from what I could discern, most of the writers were Zionist Jews, in other words, radical Jews at that. I looked up anti-Semitism in the 4 encyclopedias on the library shelves and found that even there, all the articles on anti-Semitism had Jewish authors. As illustrated by the popular Microsoft Encarta Encyclopedia today, published by Funk and Wagnalls, they are still authoring almost all the articles on anti-Semitism. The Encarta article on anti-Semitism has a Jewish author by the name of Naam Norbert Glaitzer, a revered scholar in the Jewish community and author of the very supremacist and ethnocentric book called Jewish History. Encarta also has a recommended reading list on anti-Semitism. And I reproduce it here in the pages of Jewish Supremacism. Alex Bein, Nathan C. Belf, Francois Fruet, David A. Gerber, Jacob Katz, Bernard Lewis, Leon Polakov, and Yehuda Reinhartz. Now, the theme common to the article and all Jewish-authored books recommended by the encyclopedia is rather simple. Throughout history, Jews have been innocent victims of evil Gentiles. In hundreds of civil, national, and religious reactions against Jews outlined by these books, there is never a hint that Jews could have done anything at all of a disreputable nature. They were simply innocent little lambs led to the slaughter. Christians, Muslims, Zoroastrians, pagans, and other antagonists were all said to be motivated by religious or ethnic intolerance and hatred of Jews, basically for no reason. The books also argue that innocent Jews are universally made into scapegoats for social and economic problems. Just so the reader understands that Encarta is not an exception, I also reproduce in my book the suggested reading list at the end of Greuler's Encyclopedia, its article on anti-Semitism. And by the way, Eric Rosenthal wrote that article and presumably picked out the reading list. Bibliography: Shmuel Almog, Hannah Arendt, Michael Curtis, Jacob Katz, Leonard Dinnerstein, J.G. Geiger, D.A. Gerber, and Leon Polakov. Now, aren't these suggested reading lists equivalent to recommending articles on the Arab-Israeli conflict written only by Palestinians? Are articles on anti-communism written only by communists? It is suggested by some of the authors that inherent Jewish superiority in ability and morals causes Gentiles to be jealous and spiteful. Many books on anti-Semitism even argue that anti-Semitism is a manifestation of mental illness, and that it is an inherent defect among Gentiles. In discussing the almost universal, oft-repeated anti-Jewish attitudes of the past 2,000 years, Glatzer, Rosenthal, and the other writers fail to recognize the reasonable assumption that the Jewish people may have been, at least in part, responsible for the repeated negative reactions against them. One would also never suspect that Jews themselves held any intolerant attitudes toward Christians and other Gentiles. Without exception, in every conflict between Jews and Gentiles, the Gentiles and Christians are depicted as wholly evil, while the Jews are depicted as totally blameless paragons of goodness and virtue. Glatzner, Rosenthal, and the other Jewish partisans have a one-sided point of view. None of their books mention that the negative Christian reaction to Judaism arose out of the Jewish anti-Gentile rhetoric of the Talmud and the persecution of early Christians by Jews such as Paul, Saul, until his conversion. Viciously anti-Gentile Jewish teachings long predated the anti-Jewish Christian writers, but none of these Jewish authors even mention this vital fact. The more I read, the more I realize that the articles and books castigating Europeans as anti-Semites are themselves racist in the most pejorative sense. To portray a race of people as inherently psychotic and murderous is just about the worst thing someone can say about a race. And yet the mainstream Jewish media characterizes European Christians precisely that way. And it must be said that the media also categorizes Palestinians and Arabs in the most unflattering ways as well. So, this is how I'm supposed to get the truth about anti-Semitism, I thought. Jewish chauvinists must explain it to me. Well, if that's good logic, then we might as well learn about the Second World War only from the perspective of Nazis, or the history of the Palestinian people only from the followers of Menachem Begin. How could anyone discover the truth about the causes of the Gentile-Jewish conflict from reading only the Jewish side of it, or from only those Gentiles who endorse the Jewish view? Gentile writers cannot help but learn very quickly that there are great advantages to adopting the Jewish point of view to get their books accepted by the major publishers or reviewed in the thoroughly Jewish New York Times Book Review. The same is true if they want to be interviewed on programs such as the Jewish-produced Today Show. And, of course, they must promote Philo-Semitism for their works to become recommended reading by the encyclopedias. Why in all the mainstream media are people not allowed to hear the reasonable view that anti-Semitism has frequently been a reaction to Jewish supremacism and misanthropy? Certainly, there have been intolerant outbreaks of anti-Semitism in which innocent Jews have suffered or died. That being said, we must also acknowledge that Jews have committed more than their share of anti-Gentile intolerance, and dare I say it, genocide. However, we never hear about the Jewish excesses. To end the recurring cycles of anti-Semitism, we must try to learn its real causes. Is anti-Semitism an irrational response that finds its genesis in the mental pathology of its adherents, or does it find its origin as an understandable reaction to Jewish behaviors? It is reasonable to think that Jewish supremacy and anti-Semitism nourished each other over the generations, ultimately producing the modern horrors of the Second World War, the Holocaust, and Zionist imperialism. The conflict may well reach a dehumanizing crescendo in the 21st century unless we learn the true roots of the conflict between Jew and Gentile. To understand what has motivated Gentile opposition to Jews as a group, it is important to be aware of Jewish patterns of behavior that Glatzner and other authorities in anti-Semitism fail to acknowledge. So-called anti-Semites have alleged, over the centuries, that, as a group, Jews have disproportionately engaged in unethical and exploitive practices such as usury, the slave trade, prostitution, fraudulent business schemes, and various other criminal enterprises. Many have alleged that Jews use unethical business practices and collusion to gain control over commerce. Anti-Semites have charged that many historic examples exist of Jews collaborating with foreign enemies of their host nations. Charges of Jewish disloyalty have been voiced since the time of their sojourn in Egypt and have continued to the present day. Examples are the convicted atom bomb spies, the Rosenbergs, and more recently, the Israeli spy, Jonathan Pollard. It was time for me to dig into the roots of anti-Semitism. When I delved into the great body of popular Jewish authors on anti-Semitism, two themes emerged. The first and most popular theme is that anti-Semitism stems from the fact that Gentiles blame Jews for the crucifixion of Jesus. To quote the Encarta Encyclopedia, Jews from the 4th century and perhaps even before then were viewed as the killers of Jesus Christ, unquote. Another theme of Jewish and philo-Jewish writers is that anti-Semitism arose from Gentile jealousy of Jewish economic and social success. Jewish writer Arthur Hertzberg shows how blaming anti-Semitism on Christian intolerance has a strategic advantage. Quote, to blame Christianity and only Christianity for most anti-Semitism has certain advantages for Jews. Their sufferings through the centuries can be conceived as noble martyrdom. The attacks on Jews are not to be connected with their own distinctive beliefs, culture, and patterns of behavior, and in some cases, their faults, but only with their faith. That's from Arthur Hertzberg. Thorough study of historical Jewish-Gentile interaction reveals that blaming the crucifixion of Christ on the Jews had only a minor role in ancient and modern anti-Semitism. For instance, biblical passages asserting that Jews crucified Jesus Christ did not prevent Christians from trying to convert Jews and bring them into the Christian community. Obviously, the Christian church did not see Jews as irredeemable because of the actions of their Pharisaic ancestors. Early multi-ethnic Christians opposed Jews not on the basis of race or ethnicity, but primarily because of Jewish beliefs and practices. In regard to religion, Jews as a group were opposed primarily because of the intractable, anti-Christian and anti-Gentile character of the Talmud and concomitant anti-Christian acts, illustrated by the mass persecution and murder of Christians by Emperor Nero's Jewish mistress, Poppaea Sabina. In stark contrast to the ethnically more tolerant Christians, Jews based their opposition to Gentiles on race. While Christians repeatedly tried to convert Jews, Jews made no real attempt to convert Christians. Instead, they erected barriers to conversion. And the small number of Gentiles who did convert were designated, according to Jewish law, as bastards. Jewish priests were forbidden to marry Jews who were converts or even the descendants of converts, a policy that's still in effect today and law in the nation of Israel. In all Jewish history in Western civilization, there is not one Gentile convert to Judaism who became a significant Jewish leader. On the opposite hand, there are many Jews who became leaders in the Christian church and other parts of Christian society. Christianity evolved from a precarious fledgling faith into the state religion of Rome, and later Europe itself became synonymous with Christendom. Once secure in its own power, Christianity became more tolerant of other faiths, even if disapproving of them. Hostility toward Jews found its base in economic, social, ethnic, and political issues, and there is much evidence that these factors dominated anti-Jewish attitudes even during times of little religious turmoil. For instance, anti-Semitism was not historically limited to Christians, but found virulent expression before the Christian era, and in many non-Christian lands. Religious antagonism often seemed to be a rationalization of economic and social hostility. I sought out the works of the giants of European literature, philosophy, and science on the Jewish issue. Sometimes I would spend hours in the library looking up Jews and Judaism in the indexes of the books of some of the greatest Western writers. I found that many had things to say that would be considered anti-Semitic today. It would be impossible to list them all, but a few of them include Milton, most of the Catholic popes, as well as most major Protestant leaders, early ones anyway, Shakespeare, Kant, Goethe, Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, Voltaire, Shaw, Emerson, Melville, Dickens. Even my favorite American author, Mark Twain, made some interesting comments about Jews. Most of Twain's remarks on the Jews in an 1899 Harper's Magazine article are extremely flattering to the Jewish people, but some parts of his essay are impermissible today. Quote, in the Cotton States after the war, the simple and ignorant Negroes made the crops for the white planter on shares. The Jew came down in force, set up shop on the plantation, supplied all the Negroes' wants on credit, and at the end of the season was proprietor of the Negro's share of the present crop and part of his share of the next one. Before long, the whites detested the Jew, and it's doubtful the Negroes loved him. And the Jew is being legislated out of Russia. The reason is not concealed. He was always ready to lend money on a crop and sell vodka and other necessities of life on credit while the crop was growing. When settlement day came, he owned the crop, and the next year or year after, he owned the farm, like Joseph. And In the dull and ignorant England of John's time, everybody got into debt to the Jew. He gathered all the lucrative enterprises into his hands. He was the king of commerce. He was ready to be helpful in all profitable ways. And religious prejudices may account for one part of it, anti-Semitic prejudice, but not for the other nine. Unquote. To my amazement, Jewish histories, which are intended mainly for Jewish eyes, frankly record cases of Jewish economic exploitation from ancient times to the present. I found the Jewish historians far more enlightening on the issue than the Gentile writers that I had read. They had no prejudice against Jews. If anything, they had a clearly supremacist bias for their own people, and many of them practically gloated about their financial victories over the Goyim. Ladies and gentlemen, I will continue my chapter, The Roots of Anti-Semitism, Economic Exploitation, on tomorrow's broadcast. And I hope you're finding it interesting. Tomorrow we will go into the subject of usury, something that's been talked a lot about in terms of the Jewish people and Jewish extremism. And I hope that you'll get a good understanding of what usury was, and we'll go into the other aspects of the economic exploitation that existed and the reason why Gentiles had such a negative reaction to it. I appreciate your listening to this book. I appreciate the fact that many of you are approaching this subject for the first time. Some of you have been led to this broadcast, to this spoken word version of Jewish supremacism by your friends or family. And I appreciate your open-mindedness and your willingness to listen to a different point of view. I know this may shock many of you, the material in this book, but you can see the documentation in the book, Jewish Supremacism, and I invite all of you to order a copy, check out the quotations, look at it closely, and really join the fight for freedom and independence and heritage, things that are truly wonderful possessions of our people that are truly in danger today at the hands of the Jewish supremacists. Thanks so much. I look forward to being with you again next time.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukedave.com.